T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Recharge the batteries, if you will. I've been able, with the gig that I had with the National Football League as a consultant, has been awesome. So I've been able to get my football fix in a couple days a week, enjoy New York City, for a couple days a week, and then get out of there. So it's been a great year. Now that I got that under my belt, kind of chomping at the bit to hopefully have an opportunity to get back in the game.
Middays on the Score.
We can debate whether it's champing at the bit or chomping on the bit. We cannot debate that was Chuck Pagano on the Rap Sheet and Friends podcast in late December. Chuck Pagano, now the man in charge of the Bears defense. A guy who wrote about it and is here to talk about it is J.J. Stankovitz of NBC Sportsnet Chicago. He's on Twitter at J.J. Stankovitz and on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. J.J., what's happening, man?
Good morning, guys.
Morning, J.J. Great to talk with you. Read your piece on NBC Sports Chicago and couldn't help but wonder what you know about the way Chuck Pagano wants to work the blitz into the defense. I find the subtle changes that are going to come around with him the most fascinating ones schematically, because it seems like he's right on the same kind of defensive tree that Vic Fangio is. Things are a little similar. Where are they different?
So I literally, right before you guys called, was going through the Pro Football Focus data. So in 2011, when Chuck Pagano was the Ravens defensive coordinator, they blitzed 13.6 times per game. The Bears in 2018 blitzed 8.8 times per game. So while we're talking about a difference of 7 years, and I mean, some of the quarterbacks the Ravens were going against that year were like Dan Orlovsky and Tavares Jackson. Nothing against those guys. Obviously, Dan Orlovsky is a great analyst, but different quarterbacks for different situations. But Chuck Pagano is a more aggressive play caller when it comes to blitzing the quarterback. But that being said, the quote that kind of spurred that piece I wrote Friday night, and I was just going back and looking at some stuff, was the quote Pagano had in 2011 when he took over as the Ravens DC about how the Ravens have played great defense before he got here. They're going to be playing great defense after he leaves. So essentially just he's going to go tailor the defense to the players that are there and not try to ram a scheme into it. So I think that is kind of the number one aspect you need to take with Chuck Pagano, is that he's probably not going to try to ram a scheme into the Bears. But that being said, I think a more aggressive mentality does suit this defense well as they try to avoid, some sort of regression in 2019.
Maybe this means more to me than others, but is he a booth guy or a sideline guy?
That's a really good question. That's one of the first things I do want to ask is, because Vic was up in the booth, Pagano obviously with his head coaching experience. If he was in the booth in Baltimore, it would have been, 8 years ago. So I do think that's a really interesting question to go with, if he feels like he can see the game better and call the defense better from the field or up in the booth.
I mean, I find it significant, too, just because of the way you choose to relate or not with some of the individuals, where sometimes it's easier rather than grabbing a guy by the face mask and say, go do this, when you're just looking at them where you've abstracted your approach and you look at them as chess pieces to be deployed, where you're relying on your assistants whom you trust to say, hey, this guy's hung over, or this guy's miserable, or this guy just rolled his ankle and didn't tell anybody. That those are the kinds of things where you don't necessarily need to see it yourself if you have subordinates you trust to give you that info.
I think, Dan, that's a really good point about the subordinates, given that Vic Fangio worked with a lot of the guys on that staff in Chicago for not only the last 4 years, but Ed Donatell is this guy going back to San Francisco in 2011. So I do think that's a really interesting point, where if Pagano is going to trust the guys on the field, whether it's maybe a Rob Ryan, which Brad Biggs reported could be an option as outside linebackers coach, or if it is, he comes in and Jay Rogers is still there, or Ed Donatell or whoever, you know, then, okay, maybe you get to know these guys, you trust them and say, okay, I can be up in the booth and I can kind of move these guys around as I see fit. That's a really going to be a really interesting question to see where that goes.
Yeah, we're told that our producers just did a Google image search, and just by the preponderance of what they got, that it makes it seem like with Baltimore he was a sideline guy, and it cuts both ways. It means that then you really have to trust your eye in the sky if you have somebody who you know can relay what he's seeing to you from that perch.
Yeah, you're going to have a really good quality control guy who you trust and, you know is going to give you the right information on not only personnel, but, you know, the kind of the smaller details of, like you said, you know, maybe a guy rolled his ankle and didn't tell him. That's interesting because, I mean, Vic was in the booth and he was a booth guy. So, you know, also kind of on the flip side of that, I'm fascinated to see how Vic does on the sidelines. With the Broncos, because he, you know, being a booth guy, you are kind of removed from the players, and it very much is more of you operating your own sort of chess match than it is kind of man management. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to see.
JJ, what do you know about how the Bears navigated the waters before they got to hiring Chuck Pagano, knowing that Vic was having the interviews, making a hire from Denver, rather, and then trying to find the replacement? Anything of note that struck you about how they went about getting to Chuck?
You know, a question I have is why the whole Todd Bowles situation was very interesting to me, because you kind of figured he would have been the number one choice to replace Vic, and whether Todd Bowles' contingency plan wasn't where it should have been or the Bears' contingency plan wasn't where it should have been, why did that break down? Why were they not able to get some sort of handshake agreement with Todd Bowles of, hey, if Vic leaves, would you like to come take over the number one defense in the NFL and work for a guy who you've been family friends with for the last, you know, 30 years of your life or whatever it is? That is kind of a question. I want to see what Matt Nagy has to say about that today. That being said, they moved quickly on this. It was an interview with Ed Donatell and then an interview with Chuck Pagano, and then they hired Chuck Pagano. And I think they probably wanted to hear what Donatell had to say about the continuity aspect of the whole thing. And, you know, you at least want to hear him out and give him the opportunity. But I do think going outside the organization and bringing in someone with that previous head coaching experience was always going to be the most alluring option to Matt Nagy, just to, you know, kind of keep the defense sort of as is in terms of the defensive coordinator handles it. He has previous head coaching experience. And it's really not something I need to worry about. I can focus my attention on getting Mitch Trubisky to the level that he's going to need to be for the Bears to repeat their success and if not build on it. So, you know, hiring someone outside the organization, I think, was always probably the most likely option. But giving Donatell that look certainly was at the least a courtesy and at the most a serious consideration.
Yeah, so does that interview of Donatell help or hurt the Bears retain him?
I don't think it does either, just given that he's out of contract and he can kind of do whatever he wants. I do think maybe there could be some sort of trust building in that interview in terms of, you know, hey, we may not be hiring you to be the defensive coordinator, but we're willing to give you, you know, maybe a different title. You know, you can be the secondary coach and the associate head coach, which I think is what Steve Wilks had with the Panthers before he became their defensive coordinator. You know, maybe you can kind of hammer something out like that, but it's going to be, you know, kind of up to Ed Donatell where he wants to go, because, you know, certainly Vic Fangio would want him in Denver, and certainly the Bears would want him back to be their secondary coach, given all the work he put in with those guys, you know, in the last couple of years.
Nagy and Pace on the dais today. We will be carrying the press conference live on the Bernstein and McKnight show a little more than 2 hours from now at 12:30. What's at the top of your list of questions, JJ? What do you need to make sure that you get answered before that thing's over?
Anything about Cody Parkey, you know, whether it's, you know, have you told Cody Parkey that you'll be exploring options to replace him? Will, you know, and Brian Pace is always very coy about these things this early out. So I think we're probably going to need to be doing some tea leaf reading in this. But, you know, essentially, why is this kicker situation continued to dog this front office for the last 3 years? And, you know, what can you really do about it at this point when you have all this money committed to Cody Parkey, and all of a sudden you're seemingly right back to square one in terms of, you know, you've got to figure out what you're doing with this, otherwise you risk having another double doink playoff exit. So that's at the top of my list. Obviously some of the stuff with Chuck Pagano and getting into, you know, how quickly that happened, kind of the Todd Bowles thing that I mentioned. You know, beyond that though, I'd kind of like to know where, you know, what the administration and the coaches and Ryan Pace think. How much has luck played into their situation with injuries with regard to not having a lot of guys wind up injured? And how much can you really attribute to Andre Tucker and Jen Gibson and Matt Nagy and that kind of triumvirate's sort of plan for keeping guys healthy and keeping guys fresh? Because to me, that's going to be one of the number one storylines in 2019 is, will this injury luck regress to the point where all of a sudden now you're having to, you know, really scramble to replace guys, kind of like the Eagles, you know, did this year? And how do you overcome that? Can you still make a run into the playoffs, even if you have to replace a number of key guys on defense or on offense or whatever it may be? So I think that's kind of a sort of interesting topic I want to try to get into today. But yeah, I mean, there is plenty more to unpack going forward here. And it is sort of a interesting dynamic because usually these, you know, coach, general manager, end of the season press conferences, it's all about, okay, what happened in the previous season?
Yeah.
And, you know, especially after a playoff loss and the way that the Bears lost, you know, what went wrong? But now you throw in the wrinkle of, we're already looking ahead to 2019 and what Chuck Pagano can do. So it's going to be sort of an interesting dynamic in terms of how this press conference is going to go in terms of looking back and also now looking forward.
Going back to Pagano real quick, in reading around, it sounds like he's a guy who's willing to take input from his players about whether it's scheme or packages or just what you can do in individual matchups, something like that. It felt a lot like how Matt Nagy talks about taking input from his own players from on the offensive side of the ball. Was that a selling point or just kind of a convenient similarity between the two, what are essentially going to be two head coaches, one doing the offense and one doing the defense for another season in Chicago?
I think it's probably a selling point. You know, Matt Nagy talked in that, you know, that little statement that they sent out about how he's a good fit for the culture that they've built. And, you know, he's a bright football mind, someone who's very well respected. But yeah, he takes input from players, and he's a guy who, it's really hard to find a former player who does not like Chuck Pagano. And I think that is very much fitting with what Matt Nagy has worked to establish at Hallis Hall. Whereas if you brought in a guy, maybe, you know, let's say Greg Williams, a guy who's brash, a very good defensive mind, someone who...
Who everybody hates.
Yes. Who's, they don't like him, but they really respect the guy. You know, I don't think that would have fit with the kind of culture that Matt Nagy has been trying to build, whereas Chuck Pagano does in that regard. And I think taking input from players is a really smart step for a guy who's coming into the situation where Vic Fangio is so beloved, so respected. I mean, you had, you know, the reaction of players when Vic took the job in Denver on, you know, Twitter was immediately kind of like, ah, shoot, this stinks, as opposed to like, man, good for Vic. It was like, ah, no, we lost Vic. And just, you know, that it's a difficult situation for someone to walk into, but I think Pagano probably is going to have the right approach for it in terms of coming in and saying, hey, you guys tell me what you do well, and then I'll figure out the best positions to put you guys in, and that may be the starting point there.
Is Pagano bringing Ed Reed with him? Because Ed's basically acting like John the Baptist over the last 24 hours for Pagano, like clearing the way and making it awesome. Like that's Ed Reed on Twitter all over the place is just talking him up.
Oh, wait, Ed Reed just tweeted, this was 10 minutes ago, quote, I need to clear some things up. I'm with Coach A. Pagano now. That's a typo, I think. We are coaching NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. No talks. LOL.
Well,
so it sounds
damn.
Like, sounds like Ed Reed's not going to be part of the staff, but I don't know if I'm trying to read into the tea leaves of whatever. Oh no, this was 11 hours ago. Sorry. If I'm trying to read into whatever this is meaning, I don't know. Maybe maybe it's just worth asking one of the two guys at the dais today if that's going
to
happen.
It's probably worth asking. I'd like to see Ed Reed around.
That's the first time Ed Reed, I believe, has been directly compared to John the Baptist.
Oh, I don't think so. The guy was a pretty damn good player.
Wait. Does that mean Eddie Jackson is now compared to John the Baptist, too?
Yeah, we can do that.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. We can do that.
Cool. Yeah.
Acting as a herald for...
Yeah,
for
clearing the way for... So I'm not sure who he's heralding for, but he can herald.
Yeah, usually the go-to instead of John the Baptist would be Silver Surfer, right?
Who's coming, the herald of Galactus,
in advance of Galactus coming to eat your planet. But hey, you do you.
Well,
I don't want to tell you how to do your job here.
15 years at Catholic school, I know what I'm doing.
JJ, thank you very much, and we'll look forward to checking in and seeing what you have to write after we get more information today.
All right, thanks, guys.
J.J. Snegovitz of NBC Sports Chicago.
I did spend a lot of time with Marvel Comics while I was supposed to be doing the Catholic school stuff, so I'm conversant in both.
Sometimes you get it in between, you end up with the weird dreams.
It's weird test answers.
This segment brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Moms can take the worry out of cold and flu season with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. It's the most accurate thermometer available and the number one choice of pediatricians. With just a gentle scan across the forehead, you get an accurate reading every time. Protect your little ones with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. We got three chances for you to win $1,000 cash today with a lucky text keyword on this very radio station. And when we come back, you want to get into the latest regarding the pursuit of Manny McGuffin?
You mean, do I want to talk White Sox baseball here on January 14th? You're damn right I do.
We'll do that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Whoa, boy. Manny Machado.
That one a no doubter. In fact, Leary Garcia never moved.
Well, you don't need to move when the ball is going over your head with an exit velocity of 130 miles an hour, it is.
Apparently Rick is committed to only playing Machado beating the hell out of James Shields until he signs somewhere.
Well, there's enough highlights to use. There's
three of them in one game. I was there. I brought my family. It's a nice day. It's a nice little day.
You don't have a family, do you?
No, I brought my parents.
Oh, that
and my brother and my sister-in-law.
All right.
Yeah,
all right. You're holding back something on the side here.
Oh,
all of a sudden
that family
big reveal here.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah. I have that family. We don't talk about them much.
Okay. Well, before we start talking and speculating about the White Sox pursuit of Manny Machado, why don't we just make sure we've got all our facts in order here and get the absolute latest on what's being reported and what's being said? And Bruce Levine is going to join us, so we can just get the pieces of the playing field laid out here. He's on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Bruce, what's the latest? What do we know? What do we not know about the contract offer, the length, the money, and all that?
Well, you know, Jeff Passan is an excellent reporter, and excuse me, he breaks an awful lot of stories. But on this one, there is no 8-year offer for Manny Machado on the table, according to my sources from the White Sox. There's no $250 million offer for Manny Machado from the White Sox on the table. So point blank is there's been one offer from the Chicago White Sox. It occurred a week ago. That has stayed on the board, and there has been no movement since that. That's according to the people that I've talked to. And that's it. And the money is much closer to $200 million than it is to $250 million. The AAV could vary anywhere between $25 and $30 million, the average annual value of the contract. So these things I know, and that's why I'm on talking to you guys right now.
Well, Bruce, we love that you are. I'm wondering this. With the contract that the White Sox have reportedly offered, that you've got out there, the numbers you just gave us, it's lower than a lot of us allowed ourselves to run with over the last 2 years. Is that us, me, running with numbers and getting all kind of crazy about a $500 million player? Or have the White Sox kind of maneuvered themselves into a place where they saw that the number of bidders for guys like Machado and Harper in this offseason might not be the types of numbers that would otherwise be in for a 26-year-old franchise-type player?
I think you're right on both. I think you're right on both. I think that we are too prone to listen to agents and say what the player's worth rather than actually judging the present market and how many bidders are there. I mean, guys, we are down to, what, 3 months into this thing, beyond that. of free agency. And we haven't seen any real 10-year offers out there on the table. I mean, there have been some perceived ones. If Harper got a 10-year plus where Jim Bowden of MLB Network reported more than $320 million, why didn't he take it? Mm-hmm. I mean, in this marketplace, in this environment for contracts, as we see, nobody getting more than 3 or 4 year deals tops, even the best players in the game. Why does anybody assume there's a 10, 12 year contract? The last 8 year contracts out there were Jason Hayward and Miguel Cabrera. How have those worked out?
Wait a second here. Isn't it possible that if this is all true, that we had outsized expectations, mm-hmm. we listened to agents, and the reality is that the market has been suppressed? These things are fluid. What if we keep hearing mystery team? What if all of a sudden somebody says, wait a second, this guy's a whole hell of a lot more affordable than we ever thought. All these teams, even the Padres, all these teams are awash in money. It's just a matter of wanting to spend it. Anybody's favorite team could jump into this thing in an instant. What would prevent somebody from doing it, from realizing just what we're realizing, instead of saying, well, it looks like there's only two teams, that some owner's going to wake up and say, yeah, I'll cut that check.
The reality that these things don't normally work out, period. That's what it is.
Huh.
8 years. Okay, these guys are young guys, so that is certainly enticing that they're 26 years old. But, you know, so is Jason Hayward. The idea, and I'm not putting him in their category, but he turned down a bid that was $200 million from the Giants to go to the Cubs. So from the perspective of that, too many things can happen to a guy, whether he's 26, or he's 28, or he's 31, that, you know, the attrition occur, you're not going to get your money's worth at the end of the contract. You hope you get, you know, the old story is you sign a great pitcher for a five-year deal, and if you get 3 great years and you go deep into the playoffs and win a World Series, it's worth it. That doesn't work with position players. You're watching people suffer with Albert Pujols, with Miguel Cabrera now. You know, the Cubs are doing what they can to move Hayward. Not that he's not a great guy and a great defensive player, but they'd like to move that contract. So how many of these things actually worked out? Alex Rodriguez did, but he happened to be on steroids. He had a lot of help during his 10-year contract. So reality is, Dan, your point is a great one. Hey, we can get in here and we can make our own 7 or 8 year bid and we can get the guy. But do they really want to go that long on anybody?
Bruce, appreciate it. Thanks for chiming in.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's the latest. So that sets it up for you. That's what we know.
He's got a fair point about that long, giant contract.
This notion of boldness being a new inefficiency, I think it's a real thing. I really do. The Red Sox, they spent a bunch of prospects to bring in Sale. They spent a bunch of prospects to bring in Kimbrel. They spent a bunch of money to sign David Price. And then another 9-figure deal for J.D. Martinez. And they won the World Series. Now, not every team can do that, because part of the reason why it worked for them is they had relatively low-cost, great young players like Betts and Bogarts and Benintendi. That's the core of their club. But for a lot of teams, I think a lot of fan bases now are conditioned to cheer for small incremental wins that look like efficient decisions, when in fact, let's not lose sight of what we do at the end. We don't award the trophy for the best wins above replacement or the best tactical use of arbitration dollars. They still have a trophy for the World Series champion. So let's not forget about what's going on here and the notion of winning. And to do that, I still believe you need superstar caliber players. And I think that's what the Phillies and the White Sox are trying to pursue and secure right now.
John Morosi of Fox and MLB Network, who was on this show on Friday. Really good stuff from him.
Awesome.
And I jokingly referred to Manny Machado as Manny MacGuffin, because if you know what that term means, it is a Hitchcockian term for arbitrary thing that moves the plot along. A MacGuffin would be the secret plans,
yeah,
or the microfilm, or the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. It's the thing. And I do think that this, for the White Sox, there is the signing great young player, and then there is the winning something that legitimizes you, winning a prize. And it's not the World Series, but Manny Machado is a prize, the kind of thing that the White Sox rarely would seem to win. And I think that's part of the emotion of the chase.
I think so, too. I think there's some sort of confirmation that White Sox fans would like to see about their rebuild. And in some way, signing Manny Machado can help that confirmation happen. Those two things aren't connected, but it can feel that way for a little bit before you get to February 13th and you report to camp and you do your media day and you have the whole thing happen. It doesn't mean that if you sign Manny Machado, that Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert and Lucas Giolito and Carlos Rodon and Ronaldo Lopez, you go down the line. It doesn't mean that all those guys are going to make all-star teams. It doesn't. But it does help buoy the rest of the franchise while you try and find which ones will be or which ones should be. And if they all come around, then you've got a situation a little bit like the Yankees have. And I bring up the Yankees because you asked Bruce a real good question here. If you're going along, you're humming along in your offseason, la-di-da-di-da, and you're not in on this Manny Machado stuff. Let's say you're the Yankees. Let's say you're the Dodgers, for that matter. Let's say you're the Giants. And you're just kind of humming along, and you're reading some reports, and you're seeing, you know, $200 million for 7 years
for Manny.
And you start looking around at your guys, and you're going, "That's kind of a value buy, isn't it, fellas? Why don't you crunch some? Go back to the nerdery with your calculators and have something for us by the end of the day." And then they come back with like, "Yeah, that's a really good deal, Brian. We should maybe hop on this." The thing of it is while I think White Sox fans and those anybody who wants their team to sign Manny Machado should always be worried about the Yankees because they have effort money if they want to. They can do that if they feel like it. They've created, with the signing of DJ LeMahieu, they've created for themselves this really comfortable and fairly inexpensive cushion in Didi Gregorius coming back, Gleyber Torres being on his rookie deal, Miguel Andujar being on his rookie. I mean, all that stuff, that's that big soft cushion for them. Not just financially, but production-wise, too. Remember, you're talking about creating a player in the aggregate, always. You're not that superstar can be created by a number of players all performing over their contracts. And if you've got confidence that that's what your team is set up to do, then you don't have to go out and sign the 26-year-old for $25, $30 million a year.
Well, like Bruce said, it's baseball, and that big contract almost never works. It almost never is what you think it is. So you have to be realistic
right
about what it's going to do.
But this is why the White Sox are in on this.
It's not Khalil Mack.
It's a smart, if there's a smart contract of this size, it's to a 26-year-old who can still play you shortstop.
Yeah, but why aren't more teams at this money?
Well, I think part of that goes to what we were talking about Friday with John as well. Listen, there are teams that aren't wanting to win. Take what however many you want to call them. 10, 12, 15, yeah. You can take a number of them. There are also winning teams who have, for one reason or another, convinced themselves that their young core is the way to do it. Remember, you've got a trade deadline that comes around at the end of July. You know, and if you're saddled in for $25 million to Manny Machado, how do you add Cole Hamels? How do you make the additions that you might have to make come deadline? And if that's something the Yankees are worried about, if that's something
Tommy Canley's and Anthony Swarzak and the hard
stuff, you know, I mean, they're all moving pieces here that have to be settled in together before you hit camp. So I don't think that, you know, I don't think you can look at these organizations and just say in a vacuum, $25 million for Manny Machado over the next 10 years is a really great deal. It is, but look at the sliding scale. I've said this for a little bit now. The Cubs, whether they're in or out of Machado or Harper, if they commit to that dollar amount, that annual average value, you're committing to a luxury tax violation for X amount of years. And while Theo has said on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce just the other week that we're not worried about that number, that's true, but that doesn't mean you won't be affected by it. I mean, it's fine if you don't need to think that your draft pick going from 30 to 40 is a big deal. You shouldn't. That's nothing. That really is nothing. The tax on the dollars, really? That's nothing. But if you're there for 3 or 4 years, if you're paying that tax 3 or 4 years in and losing those draft picks, you know, that a commitment now makes it certainty later.
Yeah, I still wonder if, like you say, the Yankees might revisit things if they realize that the White Sox have done all the work in creating this market and maybe the dearth of teams involved just has never energized the Machado market to get where you thought it was going to go. And then all of a sudden the Yankees wake up like, wait a second, what are we doing here? It's Manny Machado, and we're the Yankees, and somebody call somebody, and let's enough of this crap.
You're the piece of paper that said this guy, only at this value,
right.
Always got to do it, and you open up the piece of paper, and there it is. It's like draft day all over again.
Right, or it's like, yeah, if you want to buy a car, and you walk in, and you have your business card, and you say, I would like to buy this car at this price, and if we can do this, call me.
Does that work?
And you walk out. My friend's dad, that's the only way he bought cars. See, I don't need that because my dad has been, and we, our family has been working with the same Acura dealership for so long, the same.
Oh, so you got a guy.
Oh my God. It's Hub's guy too.
Hub's, you guys got a guy?
I went in there and I got my car and Bob was like, oh yeah, Hub was just in here. He just got his fifth car from me. And yeah, he's a character.
So I'm in the camp of the buy the one car and drive it till it dies scenario. Yeah. So I've never needed a guy.
Yeah, but
my father-in-law does it that way. He walks into a place. He's like, look, I saw this online. I talked to a couple people, comparison shopped. Here's my price. If you want to go for it, cool. Here's my number. Otherwise, I'm going to keep looking.
Well, see, price matching is the best thing that ever happened to us as consumers. When I know that I can go...
Those are the apps with the cars that are flying around?
Just in the policy of the big box stores, the policy of places to be willing to keep your business via price matching, as long as it's legitimate, you can go into Office Depot and you can get a cartridge of ink. And if you show on your phone that there is another store that has it for $5 less, he's got a menu on his computer and all he does click, 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 and it matches and you get it at that price.
Huh.
Seriously, a lot of places that don't advertise the fact that they do it, but if you ask, do you price match, they'll say, yeah, sure, but just it's got to be legit. You know, you can't just, you know, make up, you know, mock something up. But it happened to us when we bought my wife's espresso machine. The Nespresso.
I was going to make espresso.
No, we were at the store at Old Orchard.
Yeah.
And she's looking, she really wanted it. And, you know, because I realized I actually added up for her what our Starbucks budget was.
That is the quickest way to cut money.
And I said, between the kids, and you, I said, this is what we spend on coffees and coffee-related
things. And then after you threw up at the number.
Per year, and it's ungodly when you actually add it up. So she said, all right, let's get one of these things. And we go there, and I'm looking at it, see the price. And the salesperson sees me on my phone because I'm making the faces.
Yeah, that
I'm that husband.
You're all rumfing back and forth.
And I'm kind of like, oh, look at this. And he said, we price match, by the way. And it was like $100 less.
Hello.
Right. And he didn't want me to walk out of the store. And he said, you know, we're happy to price match.
Hey.
That's what he could tell. I was like, how did you know? He's like, I know that face.
I know that noise.
He said, I've seen that. He said, you know how many times I see that one person's talking?
Not getting the harumph out of this guy.
Give that governor a harumph. You watch your ass. He knew the look of the spouse looking at the phone to see the lower price.
Two texts real quick about this Machado stuff. Mm-hmm. This from the 260. These deals never pay out handsomely, but in every industry, there comes a point where raw production trumps value. That is absolutely 100% true, and that's the worry I think White Sox fans, any fan of a team who wants Machado has about the Yankees hopping in. This from the 319, Machado carries the risk of being a bum. Teams didn't like what they saw in the postseason. I don't think that's true.
I have very, very, very low bum risk here.
Every player comes with a risk, quote-unquote, of being a bum. Fact of the matter is Manny Machado, as a 26-year-old, was hit that way even after a knee injury. I'm good to go with the production. As far as the teams didn't like what they saw in the postseason, here's what it is. Teams loved what they saw in the postseason. They loved what they heard in the postseason because what it gave them was this nonsense ammunition to look at him across the table if they felt like they needed it and say, you don't want to hustle? Well, that's going to cost you $15 million. And they loved it because they don't give a damn right. If he hustles.
I don't know if we can trust your professionalism there, Mr. Machado.
They don't give a damn about that. They want the production, and they want a guy who's going to show up and do it every day. And that's what Manny Machado does, even if he doesn't run out the first every single Sunday.
When we come back, it is your first of three chances to win $1,000 in cash with a text keyword. I have the keyword right here. I know it. You will, too, in a moment. Also, I don't know if you saw this news today. Theo Epstein is no longer the smartest member of the Chicago Cubs organization.
What?
If you thought he was before.
Who the hell did they hire? Why does Neil deGrasse Tyson want to work in baseball?
They've seriously hired one of the smartest people ever to be a professional athlete.
Huh.
Which is always a good thing. And I think that's why they hired him, too, frankly.
We'll tell you who it is next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
It was just last week we were looking at some of the resumes. That, you know, we had a text here. It's like, yeah, all these nerds running baseball. We're saying, well, you know, that's that whole bit is 20 years old now. That every baseball team is run by somebody with multiple degrees.
Some buddies
from famous universities.
Of the nerds.
Yeah, any World Series that's won is going to be won by one of those people you decry. And if you're reaching back to Billy Beane and Moneyball at this point, you're very, very late to the party. We're talking about Rick Hahn and looking at the bachelor's degree from Michigan, the law degree from Harvard, the business degree from Northwestern, calling the most educated man in baseball. Well, the Cubs have just hired Craig Breslow.
Craig Breslow, reliever, Red Sox. He was unhittable in like the divisional round and the championship round for the Red Sox in 13. And then just got torched in a third of an inning in the World Series. I remember he had come out. The Red Sox were hurting for bullpen help, and he came out just blazing.
Well-traveled Craig Breslow. He was these are the teams from 2005 to 2017. Padres, Red Sox, Indians, Twins, Athletics, Diamondbacks, Red Sox, Marlins, Twins, Indians. And he is ridiculously intelligent. It was always sort of it almost became comical the way managers would talk about him and teams would talk about him. He majored in molecular biophysics and biochemistry at Yale.
Oh, well, that's the easy one at Yale.
Well, sure, that's like
that's the easy one at Yale. They just give those out.
Is it sociology at Duke?
Basket weaving? Right. I mean, that's the easy one.
If you're an athlete at Yale, they immediately...
Exercise science at Wisconsin. Right. Everybody had that thing.
They steer you into molecular biophysics and biochemistry. Jeez. And it sort of became almost like a running joke in baseball because he kept being on these lists of like the smartest people in the history of professional sports, et cetera, the whole thing. I think it was the Minneapolis Star Tribune did a whole smartest man in baseball thing. And he's like, but he really is. So this hire, the Cubs have named him director of strategic strategery.
Strategery, yeah.
Something like Stratego.
He will man the lockbox.
Right.
And deploy the strategery.
Initiatives of strategic strategery. What that is
going to lock him in a dark room and make him do math.
He's available to do something. Hire him. Get him a desk. Get him a computer and plug it in.
And a radar gun. Everybody gets a radar gun. Everybody gets a radar gun.
Radar gun, quarter zip, and blade sunglasses.
Yep. And you will apply the scout tan behind the ears. That's how that works.
And that's knowing the Cubs, they're like, oh, Craig Breslow? Yeah. We'll figure out what his job is after. Get him in the building, get his baseball information, and have him do something.
Craig, we were wondering if we could just pop you for about $150K a year, probably some health benefits, and a real easy travel schedule. You good for that? Sure. What am I going to do? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just those are the numbers and just come on through.
We don't.
Craig, we really haven't been able to win an HQ trivia yet. Could you pull one of those out for us?
We suck at science at trivia nights down at the Houndstooth. So we're looking for a help.
It's sort of the equivalent of when a college team adds a guy to bring the numbers up. Right, that you get the guys at the end of the bench that happen to be. I mean, look, Duke used to do it too when they had George Bergen on the end of the bench, and then they had Crawford Palmer, who was a double major in economics and Russian.
What?
Yeah, and
that guy's on a watch list right now.
Seriously, and then he wanted to take a bunch of classes, and then they're like, "No, we don't want you taking these classes anymore." And he said, "I'm leaving."
See ya.
Yeah, and because Krzyzewski said he was spending too much time in the classroom or something. He's like, well, I'm kind of here in college.
That posturing by coaches is just...
Right?
It's the worst. So greasy is what it is. Greasy.
Talk to Robert Smith about it.
You have the same thing going on?
At Ohio State?
Yeah.
Want to be pre-med? Like, no.
Can't do it? Not allowed?
Right. They told him you're not
going to... out of those classes.
Right.
We don't have tutors who do pre-med, Rob. You have to come back to class.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, that's really awesome, and you're not doing that. You're like, so I think I'd love to talk to Craig Breslow about what his job is to come up with strategies.
Do you think he knows yet?
No. Well,
it'll take a couple of weeks.
I strategize in my office of initiatives. I have initiatives to create strategy to strategize initiatives. I show great initiative in my strategies.
Thanks, Craig. Great talk.
All right. Good talk. Go get him, big fella. But
go Bears!
You know, hey, companies do that. That person available, hire him. Then what are you going to do?
We'll figure it out. He'll find spaces to work.
All right, we have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a story that could not be more on brand for the Bernstein and McKnight Show because it brings in just a little bit of everything in a lot of ways. I've got a favorite athlete of mine who might be close to done, and I will celebrate him.
Like done at athletes or done at athletics maybe, rather, or done at like life?
Maybe. Well, he's at an age where he's just suffered an injury that might mean he could work himself back. He might not, but I want to allow for the fact that he might be done. He is a guy who won at life, by the way. This is a guy.
I like reading through that list.
This is a guy who won. He's won everything.
I'll have a tale of a guy who's about to win at life. Not yet, but about to win. A woman, wine, and Pringles. We're going to talk about that as well. Yeah.
My dad sent me this story.
Yeah, we're going to get to it.
It's art.
It really is.
It's modern American art.
It's transcendent. It's next in the Midday Midway. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.